Yo, everybody. You're back listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Today, I have three guys from the group Poetic Thrust, based on the East Coast, here to talk about their latest EP, On Deck. Super stoked to talk about them. Hip-hop meets jazz. Please help me welcome Poetic Thrust. Welcome, everyone. So excited to have Poetic Thrust today, all the way from the East Coast, visiting us to talk about their great music that's out right now. You should totally check it out on all streaming platforms. We got two MCs on and a keyboardist. We got my man Yo, we got Nakama and Juno on. So welcome, everybody.
What's good?
What's good? Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
You're most welcome. So yeah, let's chat about your last EP that I saw, On Deck. We've been listening to that over the weekend, getting ready, prepping for this. What was your process on creating this from the lyrical and the instrument side?
Okay. this is Nakama. So we had been doing a bunch of sessions because we had had a residency at Lucy Rouge in Brooklyn. And we had taken some time. We were working on a lot of different things at once. We had a bunch of different kind of sketches and outlines, things that we wanted to do and elaborate on. Then we took a trip with Nat out to his little Pennsylvania cabin, which was really sick. And we kind of just workshopped a bunch of ideas all at once. As far as instrumentally, we had some of the stuff floating around already, and then other things were completely new. And then lyrically, I mean, Yo can speak to that as well, but I know for me, it was a lot of just trying to be transparent and introspective in a way that wasn't obtuse or so existential that you kind of lose sight of what we're actually talking about. So right. lots of references to food and having space with your friends and loved ones, etc.
Yeah. On the instrumental side, this is Juno speaking, the keyboardist. You know, Nakama was saying something about transparency. I think that's a good word to sort of describe the entire process for Poetic Thrust. Anyway, we mentioned the residency. I record every single, we played every week and I recorded every single session. And whenever there, we improvise about 2 hours worth of music during these sessions. And whenever there's a good moment, we make mental notes. I post it in the chat. And the way we make songs is most of the time we revisit these tracks and kind of expand on it and form it alongside of when the MCs create their lyrics. So
yeah, this is Yo here. I can pretty much agree with what both Nakama and Juno were saying. I don't know, the process, at least from my perspective, I always like to take a super organic approach to it. I think the EP was very much steeped in a combination of nostalgia, but also where we wanted to go. Because at the time we had only had one project under our belt, which was All Water. And I think going forward, we were at a time where we were like, we need to be utilizing our time as a unit collectively rather than just like a band of like seven people playing together. How can we really come across as, what we are? Like, we're friends first before anything. And I think we were able to pull from everyone's individual experiences in a more focused and organic way this time around. That's kind of what it was like, at least from my perspective anyway.
Nice. Yeah. And I saw that you guys were all friends. Now, a lot of you met while studying at Sunny Purchase. Is that correct? And if so, how did your group kind of come together?
Yo again. I think it came together very organically, which I think is super important. Nakama and I had met, I think it was maybe my sophomore year, because I had just transferred in. So I knew a couple of heads. And long story short, I ended up meeting him right before, I think, maybe it was the semester ended. And I had actually thought about not coming back to Purchase. I just really wasn't having it my first go around. I ran into him in Brooklyn at this pretty low-key event. And then we chopped it up. And I was like, damn, this is a cool dude and his shit's fire. And then we were all right, we definitely got to kick it when we get back. And then, as fate would have it, we ended up living in the same complex, on the same floor, right around the corner from each other. And that's how he and I met.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say like, yeah, jumping off of what Yo said, we actually all didn't know each other at the same time. So like me and Yo met first, as far as the PT is concerned, me and Yo met first. Then we actually lived across from Nat and Stu. That's and right. Got aware of like their stuff that they were doing. And I hadn't met Juno until I graduated.
So wait, what?
That, yeah, dude. I literally
lived with Nat and Stu. I don't
but you but we never saw you. So as far as we were concerned, Juno was like this mythical person. But yeah, like there was basically like this session that these guys were planning, and everybody was kind of aware of each other's work at a certain point. And yeah, so we like hopped in the studio one night, like super late. Me and Yo like were like training off verses and like freestyling and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. While the instrumentalists were like going in the live room. And after the session was done, we were like, yo, this is crazy. Like, I need to do this more often. And they were like, oh, well, as fate would have it, blah, 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 blah. And then we ended up starting the Lucy session.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that session was really what we thought of. So I'll backtrack a little bit. I was actually, all the instrumentalists, we all were students in the jazz department. I was in a band with Zach, the drummer, called Vinyl Canvas. And I guess it was funny. I was also thinking of leaving the program, but honestly, I mean, I owe a lot to Zach for, you know, calling me to just practice together, to make some music together, because we ended up forming a band that I really enjoyed. I was like, I was in a dark place with music, and that kind of really saved me, kind of kept me, you know, kept me in the program. And so, yeah, so we would do our sessions, we'd make our music. And I actually remember seeing Nakama in like a senior project or something. And you were spinning over, I think maybe some Crack Hour beats or something. And you were using this vocal transformer. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, who the hell is this guy, man? Needless to say, I was really hyped when we had that session in the live room. And so graduating, we got this call from a friend of mine who was also in the jazz department. He was doing a night at Lucy Rouge playing piano. And he texted me and he was like, yo man, like this bar owner is trying to create like a hip hop night or something. Can you put together a band or something to, you know, to play some background music? And I was like, cool. At the time I was playing with Zach and Stu. So I called them, and then we called Nakama, and that was and fate would have it. That was the session that, you know, went on every week for four, whatever years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. And you can definitely hear in your voices. And for me, actually being able to see you now, it's nice to see that you guys still kind of have that friendship as an underpinning. And it's so organic how you all came together. And it kind of actually pulled you back into your school situation when some of you are kind of coming out of that. So that's always interesting how that happened through music. So now for people who haven't listened to you yet, to encourage them to go out and listen to you after this, how do you classify your sound? Now in your bio, it says that you're a bold take on the cross section between hip hop and jazz. Poetic Dress is a 7-piece live band dedicated to bending the form of contemporary music and always adding a little soul. So how do you accomplish that? And what do you define your genre? What do you sound like? Paint us a word picture of what we should be hearing.
Okay, you should be hearing, like, the first time that you ever heard Castles Made of Sand by Jimi Hendrix, like, the first 45 seconds, except right after that, some massive 808s come in, and then people start rapping in 3-4, and then after that, there's, like, an instrumental breakdown, and two horns come in, and it kind of reminds you of Outkast, but not really, because we don't like comparing ourselves to other people. it's literally a combination of a lot of different musical stylings, but predominantly jazz oriented and hip hop produced. So, you know, you're going to get tinges of every genre that's kind of existed, at least in American audiences, for the past like 80 to 100 years. we'll throw some gospel in there too. Like there's no telling. Like it can go anyway.
See, that was way more way more better worded than I could have ever said. I usually just tell people it's jazz influenced hip hop, but like, you know, like Nakama just said, we don't like comparing ourselves to it's hard, you know, because the main element for us is that improvisational aspect. And so all of our influences come from different things. So you're just going to, when you're all just kind of being honest at the same time, something's going to happen. And you can't really, I don't know. You can't really like, it's not like we all look at together. We're just like, okay guys, hip hop. Let's do that. Or something like that, you know, or we kind of just play what comes through the moment. But I guess you're right. I mean, by nature of like having MCs and having like a booming bass and like a boom bap type, you know, beat, you know, it's good. There's going to be lots of elements of hip hop and jazz. So I usually just say jazz influence hip hop.
Mm-hmm. I guess just to add on. I feel like Knock pretty much like hit the nail on the head with that description. Like I was going to say something like it's a fist coming at you real fast. So you like put your guard up, but when the fist opens, it's like a heart. So you lower it, but then the heart explodes. So you're just like, you don't really know what happened, but you kind of know that you were into it.
But it explodes into butterflies.
Exactly. Like, I guess it was great at the end. But I feel like if I can describe it, or if I could describe it in a more sensory sort of way, to me, it feels like standing in a room of finely tuned speakers, but with the volume sort of filtered to the perfect frequency. So it's not even so much in your ears, but I think it's something that you feel in your body, the way that it resonates. It's more of like a vibration than anything. I feel like I can say that because of how people have described us to us, where it's like you could kind of be walking by and like hear it and it kind of just draws you in and you don't know what about it you like specifically, or maybe it's like a combination of things in overload, but for some reason you're drawn to it and you know that you have to be there and you have to take it in whatever capacity it's presented to you as. And I think it's so honest in what it is, it almost like forces you to be a little bit honest with yourself and why you're digesting it, or like how you even ended up there in the first place, which I think is a beautiful thing. And I think all music should kind of make you feel that way.
Definitely, like the whole is greater than the sum of its parts situation. Yeah. Like there's all these different voices that kind of coexist and are having a conversation. And then when people listen, like they're invited to join in on the conversation, or at the very least feel like they're present and a part of it. And the engagement that we had with the audience, it's just, there's nothing like it, you know. That's the best way to describe it. This is a very unique experience that like cannot be quantified by any one particular set of words.
I love the music that we record, and I always love, you know, what we accomplished and put on paper. But I will say, man, Poetic Thrust you have to be there to experience, you know, to really experience, like, and then maybe you tell us how, you know, what we sound like, because that was even the challenge to answer ourselves when we're all like, you know, listen to the same speaker, press and record. We're just like, man, where should we take this? You know, it's again, but when we're in the moment together, Poetic Thrust is, it's amazing in person. And every week was just like a new experience, you know?
For sure.
Awesome. So I guess my next main question is like, what's next for the group? Like, where do you think you guys will go from here?
I think, you know, with the current situation, you know, people have been tending to themselves, their families. You know, we're kind of all over the map at the moment. So as a band, I believe, you know, we're kind of taking a bit of a creative hiatus, but each individual person has their own creative endeavors going on. So I think right now it's just sort of the time to hone in on our each individual voices, and we're not, you know, have no real pressure to like put out any content. You know, Nakama has a whole, you have to check out his music. He's just gushing with content right now, his own. So is Yo. You know, it's just, as a band, I just can't wait. You know, I think first I'm just looking forward to that moment where we're all together in that same room again. So, but I'm not sure when.
Word. I mean, I can speak more generally to it, but I think that whatever is in the future for us is like, kind of like, it's like an anime, right? When like everybody goes on like their individual arcs to like become like 50 times stronger, and they have like mad new forms and like new weapons, like all types of like crazy techniques. Like that's what we're doing right now. Everybody is going in and like just refining
the dojo.
Yeah, exactly. Like everyone's like refining their process and their craft, and like just trying to make it as dope as they can possibly make it, so that when the inevitable time comes and we are all back in the same space at the same time, it's just like, all right, boom, like 100 times energy spirit bomb all at once, but from seven different people.
You just map in space, like zoom out, and then you see Earth, and then you just see like the explosion in one tiny corner. It's like that's where we all met up and dapped each other.
For
real. Yeah. That's the butterfly explosion again.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. So I guess if I backtrack, then before you guys met, continue with the anime comic book style origin story wise, how did you individually realize that you had musical gifts?
I guess I'll go for it. Mine just like popped in my head.
Well, yeah, go for it.
It's an interesting question because there are a lot of, and I think I was like talking to Nak, I was like legit talking to you about this like yesterday.
Yeah.
I feel like most days I feel like I haven't even really like tapped into it, or like I feel like a gift, like I guess to identify a gift in that sense, someone else would have to identify it as something special for you. And I think for me personally, like I'm at a point where I'm like, yes, I know this is special, but like, I think for me to see it how other people might see it, I gotta go like a little bit deeper every single time, or like raise the bar every single time, not really finding that complacency. But I guess in a more direct way to answer your question, I always did a lot of poetry, and I was really into it prior to joining it with like instrumentation or like music. And I had a professor back in 11th grade, and she tasked us with an assignment, like write in some poetry like during a class for just like a project or whatever. And I did something, and like I read it, and everyone was like, yo, that was like crazy good. And then she stopped me after class and was like, you should submit this to this like scholarship thing or whatever. And I was like, nah. She would pressure me about it like every day, and then pretty much told me that she was going to fail me if I like didn't submit it. And like, I thought she was joking, and she was like, she was like very serious. She was like, no, I'm going to dock you like a couple grades if you like don't apply for this. And like, I did it. I was like, all right, cool. And I like cycled through some things I had written in the past, and I like submitted it. And then I didn't hear anything for like 4 months maybe. And I was like, all right, cool. Knew I wasn't going to win, like whatever. And then literally like down the line, one of my boys like texted me, and he was like, yo, congratulations, man. And I was like, for what? And he was like, you just won like $1,500 and you got like this crazy award. And I was like, what?
Whoa,
like,
what?
And he was like, hey, he sent me the link. And then sure enough, like my name was on that list, and it was like, yeah, you got best of the borough and you got this like scholarship of $1,500. And then my professor was like she like gave me that look, and I was like, ah, like I guess you were like right. I think from there, I think maybe that's when I began just trusting my writing a little bit more. Like I always knew that I had the passion for it, but I didn't really see it as like a viable option in life as something that I could do or could pursue, just because of like older generations being like, yeah, you should probably do this to like make your life better. But I think after that, there was like a little less doubt. And then I met all of these guys and I was like, nah, like I should definitely be doing this. You know, that's how it was for me.
Well, I was exposed to music at a pretty young age, but I wasn't taught how to appreciate it, if that makes sense. Like I was around it and I saw people making it and I understood some of the processes of making it, but I didn't understand how to like artistically involve my personality in it until I got to my, I think same year, actually, my 11th grade and like high school. Yeah, dude, I was into like rock, like a lot, like heavy. Like I was in a band, I was in a couple bands playing guitar and like singing. And then like eventually, because of Guitar Hero, funny enough, I bought those USB kits that they have with the like the later versions, like 4 and onward. And I had this USB mic and I started listening to beats like crazy. And I got suspended, actually. This is what happened. I got suspended from school and then I had nothing to do for a week. So I stayed at home and I listened to beats on YouTube and I took my USB mic from Guitar Hero and I started recording like really bad, like 16 bar verses and like trying to like, I don't know, figure out what the hell to say because I was like 14 and it just was weird. But but yeah, like again, time went on and I really started to take it seriously. I started to like shed and like really think about how to like bend language and play with cadence and use the things that I learned from playing guitar and from singing and all that to kind of incorporate like and create my own like rap style, I guess. And I'm still doing that to this day. So like, yeah, it started like again when I was young. Then I like learned to appreciate it more when I became like more active in it and just pursuing it on my own. And then from there, it was like I was super into the idea of collaboration, like whenever I could do it, because I just felt like everyone has their own unique voice when it comes to music. And you can learn a lot even without them necessarily like articulating it to you. You just have to listen.
I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I have a background of musicianship that most musicians probably wouldn't relate to. I mean, I really came into music from a dance kind of perspective. I mean, I love this video game called Busta Groove 2 that was like on PlayStation 1, and my favorite character was the breakdancer. So I'd copy their moves. You know, I really fell in love with b-boying, and that was really my entry point into like hip hop culture. So, you know, in middle school, I was like following around, you know, these dance groups, like when YouTube first came out or on whatever E-Bombs World, wherever I could find some like, you know, breakdancing videos, I was like kind of like teaching myself how to dance. And when I was old enough to get a car, you know, that's when I went out to like jams and b-boy battles. And, you know, and in these battles, like, that's where I really fell in love with beat music, you know. It was, so in that sense, like beat music was kind of all around me because that's really what I loved. And growing up, my mom is a piano player and my dad was a singer. They sang at church, but, you know, it wasn't like a hip kind of church. It was like Roman Catholic, you know, and I played guitar for them after, you know, once I learned guitar. But, you know, it was really in high school when, you know, we're starting to thinking about college. I got to think about like what I want to be doing for the future. And I mean, I was so in love with hip hop. I wish that like I could just like pursue a career in that, but I kind of knew that there was no sustainability in that. So I guess I was like, I want something close to it. So I guess I should, you know, maybe what's it like being a musician? So when I was like 14 or so, I started jazz piano lessons. And I mean, it was funny. When I told my teacher that, I was like, you know, I'm thinking about majoring in jazz. And he's like, oh, so you want to be poor like me, huh? I was like, uh-oh, man. I mean, but I was like, it was more like I chose music because like I just wanted to be connected to dance as much as I could. And I knew, I mean, I hadn't played with anyone. I think my pre-screening was sort of the first, you know, it was the first time I played with a, in a trio setting. This is for jazz. You know, we have to pre-record some audition. You know, some places require a pre-screening. You know, me and my teacher, I made a solo piano piece, like everything was choreographed down to the solo. Like, you're gonna play this note, you're gonna play this note, you're gonna play that note, play this voicing and that voicing. You know, I feel like I faked it, you know, really hard. And somehow, I don't even know to this day, man, that I got accepted to Purchase and New School, but I ended up going with the cheaper option because Purchase was a SUNY school. And so I went in there not knowing what to expect. I mean, I only knew like two keys when I started school, like B flat and F. And man, I after my first like jazz combo class, like hearing everyone rip like crazy. Oh my God. I legit cried actually after that first class. I was like, I'm not meant for this. Like, this was like, this is terrible. So, I mean, I mentioned that, you know, that Zach wanted, you know, had seen me play and wanted to start a band with me. I really mean it when I say like I owe a lot to that kid, because he really said I was going through 2 years of like being like, I don't belong in this group or in this school at all. Like I'm a total phony, you know? And so when Zach explained to me, he saw like, he was sort of like running through like the other piano players. He was like, listen, man, like I noticed the artistry. And so, I mean, I guess I believe, if you're talking about like, when did I know that I had this gift? I feel like I'm still searching for that answer now, but you know, there are these moments that tell you like, you know, I think there are other people that believe in you, and there are moments where you should listen to that, you know, and follow that. And so I did. And my third year, I was in that Vinyl Canvas group. And I feel like that was like a turning point for my music.
Excellent. Well, see, it's always nice to hear different stories. Everyone's kind of road gets them there, but everyone's road is different. So that's always cool. So on the podcast, we always have two rapid fire questions as we start to wrap up towards the end. I'm going to toss it out there and then you guys can decide who wants to go first. But the first question of two is, what advice would you give someone starting out now?
I got it. Don't listen to anyone else and practice.
Facts. Yeah.
Literally, like, don't let yourself get caught up in other people's opinions, because you have a unique voice. And finding that voice and cultivating it and creating something out of it is only something that you can do. But in order to do that, you have to practice. So don't listen to other people's shit, but also practice.
I'll bounce off of that. In your practice, I mean, connecting yourself with whatever instrument or whatever voice you have is as, you know, as often as you can and you want, you know, be kind to yourself. Don't invite shame, you know, into your life. And I'm gonna take a quote from Jacob Collier, who is like this genius jazz god. I would describe him as. He said, "Follow your goosebumps, you know, and just like feed your curiosity, and just I think that's just how you're gonna find out what you really sound like."
I'll keep it short, and I'll just say, find a master. I think it's important to you know, piggyback off what the other two said. You should definitely practice a ton and try not to invite that shame. But I think watching someone or learning from someone that you truly respect that has done it a million times over can help you find a path technically and can see the potential in you, so you can bring it out of yourself more. So it'll also save you a ton of time on like mistakes that you could have avoided otherwise. But yeah, I think having a master is important.
And sometimes your masters can be your friends. You know what I mean? Like,
that's what it was for me.
Like, I've been countlessly inspired by people who are around me. So I think also surrounding yourself with these people is key. I think supporting your friends, supporting the music that you love, and like going out to their shows, being their friend, just like, yeah, put yourself in there.
Excellent. Well said, everyone, and all good information. I'm sure people coming up need to hear that, as you needed to hear it at some point as well. And so my last question for all three of you is, what do you want your musical legacy to be? And I know it might be too early, but when it's all said and done, you know, 50, 60 years from now, we zoom and fast forward. What do you want to be remembered for most as a group, as an individual, as a musician, adding it to the lexicon of music? What do you want to be remembered for most?
I know. I want to be remembered for cultivating space for other people to, as Yo said previously, not make the same mistakes that a lot of us had to make. So I know that 60 years from now, I'm trying to have an archipelago, private island. Every single person who has access to the private island has their own personal studio, like all day, beach vibes, fly people out, art commissions, like gallery visits, augmented reality inside of the basement and upstairs meditation garden. Like, you feel me? Like, that's what I want. That's what I want my legacy to be. I want to get everybody to have a community that can be built up and sustained and become even more rich over time as more people kind of become hip and join in on the conversation and contribute to the discourse.
Bro, like, I swear you just like read that off of like my page. Like, I literally did this, like, yesterday.
Oh, shit.
I have like four pages. Like, I'll keep it super short too, but I listened to this podcast and it really forced me to like ask myself the questions that I think I hadn't been asking myself for a long time. It's especially after you release like a big project or something that you directed a lot of your attention and focus and time and energy to. And I think with me going forward, I felt like I was like shooting in the dark for a little bit. Like, I was still making a lot of stuff, but it kind of felt a little aimless for a bit. And I think, so what I did was write a ton of questions down and answered them. And I guess to answer your question more directly, like, the thing that I wrote was, I want to be able to say that I went for it in my lifetime and it worked out exactly how me and my friends envisioned. I put my heart and soul into something and the universe conspired to help me. And I want to build platforms of opportunity and create unique experiences for those listening, applying, and at least trying.
Oh, man. Well, on that, we'll leave that on a high note. I just wanted to say thank you to all three of you, Yo, Nakama, Juno, Poetic Thrust. On Deck is out there now. Go stream everywhere. You can stream music. Super excited to talk to you guys today on Deeper Grooves. We will definitely circle back to you guys when it's all said and done and out so that we can get you links, post it up on our social media, and be hopefully hearing some more music from you as we move into the next year, as hopefully things start to open up again. But so excited to be able to talk to you guys. Much respect, much love from the West Coast to you guys on the East Coast. And hopefully maybe we'll collaborate or do something ourselves someday as well.
Absolutely.
Mad Thank you love. For having us. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
All right, guys, we'll be talking soon. Take care.
All right, you too.
All right, bye. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I had so much fun talking with Poetic Thrust. Yo, Nakama, and Juno, thank you so much for being on the podcast today, talking about your latest EP, On Deck, which you can listen to on all streaming platforms now. I'd like to thank our engineer, Tim Hall, and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves or anchor.fm/deepergrooves. Until then, take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Production.